This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. Super fired up for today. We've got Kyle Green. He is the owner of the Green Mortgage Team, one of my favorite teams out there. And Kyle, he's an absolute force. We've had him on the show a number of times. A lot of our listeners are going to be familiar with Kyle. A lot of our listeners work with Kyle.
Yeah.
Not on his team, but as
clients.
Investment advisor, mortgage broker.
Yeah.
He's an absolute force, and we're happy to have him on and fortunate to have him on the show today. So,
yeah. And the other thing to note about Kyle is he's growing something so impressive that he's actually talking to people not only in Metro Vancouver, but investors across the country at all times. So I feel like if anyone's really dialed into what's going on, you know, he's helping finance all sorts of different projects. So it's always great having him on the show. So stay tuned for that. It's an interesting conversation. And though he only looks, you know, mid-20s, he's been in the business 18 years. So it's an experienced take on where we're at in the market, that's for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. Anyways, I can't wait for that. But before we get to that, Matt, we've got the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. This is an excellent kind of an activity breakdown. We're kind of going across the region. What have been the project launches this year? What has been the absorption? And what can we expect for the month of December? So quickly here, I'm just going to recap a couple things. In 2024, the majority of project launches were low-rise wood frame buildings, with 54% of launches occurring in the Fraser Valley rather than Greater Vancouver. Now, here's a question for you, Matt. 5,500 wood frame units were released, surpassing concrete releases and achieving, what would you say the absorption rate was? So this is 5,500 wood frame units. How many were absorbed?
5,500 wood frame units. You know, with everything I've heard in 2024 and witnessed, I'd say, what? High 20s, low 30s?
And you would be wrong. 45% absorption, almost half, which is actually surprising. I was kind of surprised by that.
Almost 50% of wood frame is being sold. That's impressive. That goes against the narrative we've been told and have been telling, frankly, on the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast in a lot of ways this year.
Well, okay. So here's a couple more details from the market this year. Surrey emerged as the leading market in Metro Vancouver. That's maybe not surprising, accounting for over 20% of all pre-sale project launches this year. We are aware of a few more coming. Can't wait. Marcon's obviously got a super incredible product coming to...
Their marketing is just... Like, even our ad read is just like, you know what? It's a simple high rise. Like, it's just great.
This one's got a great location. But just mentioning that, Langley followed Surrey for wood frame launches with almost 15% of total launches. Langley, obviously a lot of excitement around Langley right now. South Surrey was the top location for townhome launches, making up 20% of the market, while Vancouver West closely followed. That's not surprising. South Surrey and Vancouver West, in a lot of ways, almost catering to very similar downsizers.
Those are, I would say, downsizer markets where people are living in large homes that are worth a lot of money and they are buying what they want to buy when they're thinking of downsizing. And a lot of them are not counting the pennies to make sure it all adds up and makes sense.
They're, what do we call that? Boomer?
Oh, Oh, yeah. What do they
Uber
call that?
Blessed? What? I can't remember. I can't remember what the term I coined that lasted
seconds
was last week. But
no, huge respect. But yeah, you're right. It's a very nice position to be in.
Project launches, and just to recap, but project launches in 2024 focus largely on wood frame buildings in affordable price ranges. We're, of course, going to see more of that with competitive incentive offerings to attract end users as investor interest remained limited. We talk about investors on today's show. Are investors here? Are investors coming? We have no idea what's it going to take to bring investors back. That's a bit of a spoiler alert, I guess. But last but not least, with typical seasonal trends, sales activities begin to slow in the winter months. And we're in the first week of December. I think we've only got two more project launches, according to MLA, this month coming. And then I'm guessing a lot of the product's going to be new inventory is going to be listed or launched probably in, I'm guessing, March, April.
Yeah, you know what? There's always one or two that come hot out the gate. But like Ben Smith said a couple of weeks back, there's going to be a lull in the market where, you know, there's a potential that some of this inventory gets absorbed and some of those incentives potentially disappear, depending on what the spring looks like. But we will have to wait and see, Adam.
Yes. And Matt, of course, if listeners out there want to subscribe to the MLA Newswire, this is a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. You can just visit mlacanada.com to subscribe today. We are also sponsored by our amazing site that we've been working very hard on that anyone, I think a lot of people have already signed up. I don't know why you wouldn't. SkyTrain Condo Living. Matt, what is it?
Yeah, Adam, we're really excited about SkyTrain Condo Living. That's skytraincondo.ca. Basically, the story behind SkyTrain Condo Living is this. We've been doing this podcast for nearly a decade and always have asked our, you know, our best and brightest, the most esteemed guest we have, where would you tell your hypothetical niece to buy property in Metro Vancouver? And it's almost always the same answer. Follow the SkyTrain. That's why we're so excited to introduce SkyTrain Condo Living. It's the only real estate platform TransLink has licensed specifically for listings near SkyTrain stations. So it aligns perfectly with everything we've been hearing from planners and developers on the show about the future of our region. So head over to skytraincondo.ca where you can browse listings by SkyTrain station, by SkyTrain line, or by city, and you can also get first access to exciting new projects transforming the Metro Vancouver region. That's skytraincondo.ca.
Excellent. Well, without further ado, Matt, why don't we cut to this conversation with Kyle Green. Are the investors back? Where are the areas for opportunity? What is Kyle investing in? What's going to happen with rates? What's going to happen with inflation? And what's going to happen with the new Trump tariff? And is it coming?
Kyle's got.
We don't know.
Kyle knows. So wait for
it. It's going to be huge. Okay. All right. Enjoy, everyone. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
Adam, we want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Soane House, one of Marcon's latest communities that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design for architecture that endures.
Soane House offers 165 junior one to three-bedroom homes in West Coquitlam, integrating nature into the built environment.
Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's marcon.ca/SOENH. AUS, or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
We also want to highlight 102 and Park. With billions already invested in Surrey City's central development over the last 15 years, the time is now to invest in its future, Surrey 3.0.
Introducing 102 and Park, a simple, straightforward skyscraper featuring 376 homes. Quite simply, this is a once-in-a-decade opportunity coming soon to Surrey's Central Downtown Plaza. This is a time and the place to invest. Register at marcon.ca/102andpark. That's marcon.ca/102andpark.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with Kyle Green. He is the founder of the Green Mortgage Team in Metro Vancouver. And of course, past guest fan favorite. Thanks for coming back, Kyle.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, no, it's great to have you back on the show. Maybe for listeners, Kyle, who have not heard your various past appearances on the show, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Started as a mortgage broker when I was 19 years old, back in 2006. So I've been doing this for 18 years now. I started carving out a niche and working primarily with real estate investors back in 2008. So I hooked up the local legend, Ozzie Jurok, here in Vancouver, and started doing speaking on his stages and educating investors on how to invest in real estate. So that's been my niche and my core thing for quite some time now. So lots of presentations, a lot of webinars and other things that help people build real estate portfolios.
You know, Kyle, you're probably one of the best people to talk or to ask this question to, I should say. But I was going to start with how's the market, but maybe can we take a longer look back and specifically looking at real estate investors, what has been the shift in your mind since the time you started to today, specifically thinking like the last 3 years, 2022, up to this point in terms of your interactions with real estate investors?
Yeah. I mean, it's quite a bit different. I think we've continually seen the government continue to clamp down on making it harder and harder and harder for investors to purchase real estate. And I think that we saw a massive number of changes in the last 2 years as well that make it harder and harder. So, you know, if I look at it, this is crazy, but I remember looking at helping clients back in 2007, 2008, buying rental properties. For a very short period of time, you could buy a rental property with zero down, but it very quickly moved to 5% down. But you used to be able to buy rental properties with 5% down, get a 40-year amortization. I remember helping a client who was a new investor. I helped him buy four properties at the same time up in Prince George. You know, like it's just insane. He sent me a cover letter, and I still see him to this day. I still joke about this. He sent me a cover letter talking about himself, and he was misspelling information on his sheet, you know. Like, okay. Anyways, I helped that guy buy four properties with 5% down, and there's a number of other people that we helped do the same thing. But that was just the norm back then. And since then, it's just been a general clampdown of making it harder and harder and harder. And so the general theme is, yeah, things, you know, kind of sway and move, and usually the band gets tighter or things get easier. But I would say that the one thing that has continually changed is definitely just the government intervention. It continues to tighten up on real estate investors, in particular the residential ma and pa, you know, residential real estate investors.
What is the, so there's been a number of changes, you know, that have happened even just this past year. What in your mind is the most significant in terms of like this is clearly the most impactful policy shift or policy change over the last couple of years?
Good question. I think capital gains will have a really big impact. I don't think we've quite seen it yet, but I think the capital gains is going to be the big one. I mean, that's generally how you make a lot of your money in real estate. And I think that's the big one that I think the big money is really taking a look at. I think for the smaller like ma and pa investors, I think it's a accumulation of all of the little things. A lot of investors are just getting tired of finding that, okay, they're saying no here, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to go here. And then, oh no, you can't do that anymore. I'm going to turn around here. You can't do that anymore. And I think a lot of them are just throwing up their hands and thinking, I'm just done with this. I think one of the things for some people, as an example, interest rates were rising. People were thinking, how do I get yield and get a cash flow return on my investment? I'll start doing Airbnb, short-term rentals. So a lot of people actually switched into doing that, or even switched their long-term into short-term rentals. And then the government banned short-term rentals shortly after. So a lot of people realized that they, you know, just spent $20,000 of furniture, rented out their place 3 months on Airbnb, and all of a sudden had now have to sell all the furniture and revert back. And I think it's that frustrating moment where they just aren't in control and having to flip back and forth. So it's hard to say that there's one rule. In fact, I actually think it's just that it's everything. It's all of the rules. It's all of the little things And it's just, it seems like it's very evident that government does not want people to be investing in residential real estate.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the flipping tax? And the reason I ask about that is because a lot of people have talked about it more from the idea of inching in on the primary residence exemption. What are your thoughts on that policy?
It's interesting because on one hand, it makes sense that if it's active income, then it should be taxed like an active business if you're churning and flipping properties. On the flip side, though, I think one of the interesting things that I think is going to, I'm really curious actually to see what you guys see in 2025 with this, but what's going to happen to those properties that need a major renovation to be lived in? You know, those properties that just you guys walk in, you're like, oh my God, how am I going to sell this thing? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Like a home flipper is the ideal person gets in there and says, I'm going to buy this property. I'm going to fix it up. I'm going to find now that instead of appealing to 5% of the market that is willing to do those major renovations, now it'll appeal to 95% of the market that where it's already done. I'm worried that it's actually going to hurt inventory levels. And as interest rates continue to fall and demand continues to pick up, I'm concerned about what happens to the values of the marketplace here. So I don't think it's going to have a positive impact on keeping values down like the government is hoping. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are, but that's the thing that I think of right now.
I'm just thinking, Kyle, like maybe as a, you know, I'm thinking about the cap gain new rules. I'm thinking about the tenancy rules, the flipping tax. Like what does it take? It seems to us that a lot of investors have left the building. What does it take to get people back interested in the region?
At the end of the day, I think what happens is that money flows to, it's kind of like a circuit board. It just flows to the path of least resistance. And so I think we found a lot of things. First of all, when interest rates went up, people started to invest in things that were interest rate driven. So people started to say, hey, a GIC looks really good right now. It's paying 5.5%. You know, there's no risk, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that what ended up happening is that the stock market this year has been really, really good. And I think a lot of people think that they're, you know, amazing investors because they bought stocks in the beginning of 2024. And when the stock market starts to go down, which it will at some point, when interest rates start to, you know, continue to fall, I should say, which is already starting to happen, I think people are going to start to look at where is the yield. In my opinion, I think that where a lot of the yield is going to be is, I think instead of people trying to own 100% of one unit or two units, I think that people are going to instead say, I'm going to just invest in a pool, in a fund, and I'll be one of the investors who's involved in this large apartment building. I think that the money from the government is definitely flowing into the multifamily, and especially the CMHC-insured multifamily construction financing and all that. And I think that if you look at where they're trying to direct traffic and direct the flow of money, it's more into that. And so I think more and more people are going to say, I'm not going to go through all the jump through all the hoops in doing this. I'm just going to invest my money passively in through an exempt market dealer who's funding a large multifamily project. I think that's probably what we're going to see.
That's really interesting. You're the second person I've heard talk about that very recently. And it makes sense, I think, in a lot of ways, partly that financing aspect, but also, you know, going back to the death by a thousand cuts, you know, it's just, even if interest rates are rock bottom, and I don't want to talk too negatively about investing in real estate in Vancouver, but it's increasingly scary, you know, just buying a single unit and hoping you get a tenant that's going to be, you know, somebody you can work with. And if you want to sell it, hoping the tenant's going to leave. And, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It feels like increasingly you have so few options with a property that you actually own that, yeah, those types of investments where you can kind of leave it to the professionals, as they say, and just passively watch seem like they make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's the scale that people are getting when you're building 50, 100 units, right? That you just don't get doing one. And now with all of the things you have to do for your taxes, your accountants are charging you more every year because you've got to file this, you've got to file that. It's just, it's getting outrageous, I think. And I think that I think people are going to move into a bit more of a passive approach moving forward, which is, frankly, it's not great for my business and what we've taught people to do. We've taught people how to buy residential real estate and how to grow that and how to build a real estate portfolio. But it's just getting harder and harder. And I think people have to look at, okay, what's the next step and what's the next way to still invest in real estate, but perhaps through a different approach.
I think we're all kind of thinking similarly when it comes to investors at this moment in kind of the region's history. But, I am thinking about how quickly things could potentially change. Like if we see a government change at the federal level, and if we see, obviously we just had a very close election in BC, like razor thin margins. And now if we see a conservative government in the near future, there's the potential of rolling back some of these maybe heavy-handed policies, and things could change quite quickly. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think some things will have to change for investors to come back, but it could even just be that interest rates drop substantially too, you know? Because there's a certain point where it makes sense to borrow money to invest if interest rates are very, very low. And we've seen that, and that's probably why real estate has had such a big run over the last, 15 years, is interest rates have been very, very low. And it makes sense to borrow money in that type of climate. And what has happened in the last couple of years, like as percentage increases, we haven't ever seen that. Even in like the late 70s, early 80s, rates didn't quadruple. Crazy. We went from getting five-year fixed at 1.59% to at its peak, three-year or five-year rates were up to 6.5% in October of 2023. Pretty crazy. Yeah. So, I think that interest rates coming down is going to definitely help that. But I definitely do think that some outside help from the government is actually also going to make a big difference too. I think it would be nice for investors to see, oh, good, they're on our side again. It has felt as an investor that...
Or it's at the very least not our enemy.
Yeah. So I think that will help the psyche of the investor and investor returns as well. Like if you start to look at it, I think the reality is just when you're starting to look at buying a residential property and you look at the expected returns, they just aren't very good right now. But interest rates falling, expectations on appreciation being higher and stronger, I think all of a sudden you start to look at the numbers like, oh, my return on investment should be in the high teens or low 20s again. That's a good time to buy investment real estate again.
Right. And in thinking, moving on maybe to rates, obviously we've got a Bank of Canada meeting coming up this month, but it's also against the backdrop of Trump's potential 25% tariff. What are your thoughts on, are we going to see 25 basis points, 50? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, the pendulum swung a lot. Thank you, Trump. It keeps swinging back and forth and back and forth. Trump is just like the volatility that this guy brings with him. It's kind of nuts. But
well, and it's just getting started, right? It's like this is just the first of many weekly tweets or whatever.
So okay. So first of all, on the interest rates, as of right now, there's about a 30 or 40% chance of a 0.5% cut, and the rest of it is all being caked in as a 25% cut. So basically, there's like 100% chance of a 25% or 25 basis point cut, and about a 30 to 40% chance of it being actually 50 instead of 25. 4 weeks ago, that was about 50-50, that it would be a 50% cut. A week ago, it was like a 10 or 20% chance, and it's kind of crept up again. So it swings all over the place, but that's the current expectation for December's meeting. And looking out a little bit further into the future, the stats have shown that they've really predicted that the Bank of Canada will be about 0.75% lower by March. And how we get there could be a half in December and then a quarter in January and nothing in March. It could be a quarter, but it does seem like most people are predicting that the Bank of Canada will be coming down relatively quickly in the next little bit.
And just thinking of the rate cuts this year so far in 2024, Kyle, how have they impacted your business? How have they impacted buyer or potential buyer sentiment? And how do you think that's going to impact buyer sentiment and your business moving forward with this 0.75 point reduction if we see it?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely has a large impact on the psyche. And the interesting thing is for quite some time, until probably 2 months ago, the Bank of Canada cuts didn't really mean anything for most of our borrowers because most of our borrowers were going fixed, right? But everybody thought that it had an impact on them. So it was pretty interesting because every single time the Bank of Canada would cut rates, it doesn't mean that the fixed rates are going down. The Bank of Canada affects anybody going variable. The bond market is what impacts fixed rate pricing. And the Bank of Canada and the bond market move independently. They're often looking at the same things, but the bond market is usually predicting it ahead of time and looking at the data as it comes out in real time. And then the Bank of Canada is kind of reacting to that much later in the game usually. So usually the bond market has already caked in the chances that the Bank of Canada is going to go down. So it's not like if the Bank of Canada drops 0.25% that, hey, by the way, the fixed rate I quoted you last week, it's now 0.25% lower. You know, of course, it's theoretically possible that would happen, but it rarely, rarely happens in real life. So we do have a lot of people that ask that question. Well, I saw the Bank of Canada is going down, so that means my rate gets better. It's like, well, if you're going with a fixed rate, probably not actually. It probably won't have an impact. In fact, the last 0.5% cut we saw in October, the big one, the bond market went up by 0.03% that day. You know, counterintuitive it would seem, but that can happen. So just something to keep in mind that they can move independently. And for a while there, we were actually looking at it and thinking, especially with Trump's election, the bond market started to go up. The yields were rising and rising quite quickly. They went up about 0.4% over, you know, a very short span of time leading up to his victory. I hate even saying that, but anyways. but we're in a point where, okay, our fixed rate's actually going to start to climb while the Bank of Canada is decreasing. That actually was something that we are starting to wonder and think about. And it seems like that trend is reversed last week, but it can happen.
And so if I understand correctly, like that would be nuts, right? If variable rates were going down and fixed rates were going up, but in dramatically, like, has that ever even happened?
Yep. There are times where that has happened. Yep. It's usually not a long-term trend though. It's usually a short-term trend. So one of the challenges is that the Canadian bond market is very tied to the US bond market. And so the US is very strong right now and Canada is very weak. And so in theory, the US bond market has soared over the last couple of months. And so it's picking up the Canadian bond market along with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Bank of Canada is looking at this and thinking, we still need to cut. We're, you know, our unemployment rate is still increasing on a, you know, every month. We're in some trouble here. And so the Bank of Canada does need to cut. Also, I think Canada needs to cut it down to what's called the neutral rate. And we're still above. So we're above that neutral rate. Anytime and every month that we're above that neutral rate, we're still kind of damaging the economy, so to speak. So cutting rates doesn't mean that we are actually spurring the economy. It means that we're damaging it less, is the way that I kind of look at it. So until we cut down by about 1% from where we are today, we're not in the neutral rate range. We're still in the let's make sure that inflation doesn't come back range. And so that's where, until we cut another about 1% to get back into that neutral rate range, we're not in a position where we cut is helping as much as it is just stopping the bleeding, so to speak.
Right. So it sounds like, if I understand, this year has been one of a psychological shift, but not much else at this point in terms of interest rate cuts.
Yeah. I've had a lot of investors get ready again, and activity for me personally has picked up. So in my brokerage, my 50 agents and I were probably on pace to do about the same volume as we did last year. My personal book of business is up 40%. So I'm having a better year this year. And I think that my investors are starting to come back more than they were last year. But it's not nearly the same rate or pace that we've seen in the past. You know, still a lot of people get pre-approved and then they just never find anything that kind of meets their numbers. And I'm sure you guys have run into that too, where just nothing cash flows. And so people aren't pulling the trigger. But I would say that it has, you know, we have seen at least people starting to come back and get a little bit more active, and falling interest rates definitely helps on the mortgage side more than it helps on the realtor side, for sure. Like for us, it's not just purchases that we make money on. We also do refinances and renewals, and it's a little bit easier to do refinances when the rates are lower, not higher, right?
Can you talk about the stress tests and refinancing for our listeners? I know there's been some changes recently.
Yeah, and we are still getting news on this. One trend also that I should mention is the government saying, oh, we're going to do this now. And then everybody in the industry is like, sorry, what? What's happening? like when they announced a couple months ago the new CMHC rules and, oh, we're going to allow 30-year amortizations and for first-time buyers, regardless of whether you're buying brand new or not. When that came out, we called CMHC that day, and CMHC is like, this is the first we're hearing of this. Literally. I'm like, okay then. I'll let you guys figure your stuff out and let us know when you know, I guess. Like, literally, this is the way the government has been acting. And it's been over and over and over again. Like, this year has just been, it's crazy. It's absolutely. So I'll tell you what I know. So the stress test, for everybody that doesn't know what it is, it's basically that they take the rate plus 2%, and you have to qualify as if your rate was 2% higher. And that was instituted particularly when interest rates are quite low to normalize things. So that baseline was always a minimum of 5.25% for the rate, or the rate plus 2%, whichever is higher. Now, the crazy thing is, for a while there, like back in October of 2023, we were having to qualify people at a 6.3% interest rate plus 2%. We're qualifying them as if their rate was 8.3%, which is kind of crazy, you know?
Buy it on a credit card.
Yeah, it was so hard to qualify people back then, for sure. Now that's obviously, as rates are coming down and you're getting rates in the fours, now you're qualifying them in the sixes, which is a little bit more reasonable. But the government has recently come out and said, you know what, we're going to make it a little bit easier for you to switch your mortgage out on renewal. But there's a whole bunch of weird talk about, oh, well, if it's a federally regulated lender, then you can switch without the stress test. So now if you come up for renewal, you don't have to stress test your mortgage to be able to move it to another federally regulated institution. But there's a lot of clarity that has not been added yet on what about credit unions. They're not federally regulated, they're provincially regulated. And it seems like they may be left out on this rule. And yeah, which is kind of a weird one. And it's interesting because technically provincially regulated lenders don't need to follow the stress test rule, but many of them do follow it. And so it's possible that if this is all just for federally regulated lenders, that then the provincial regulators might say, well, if federally they're doing it, then we can also change our policies too. And then maybe credit unions will move on that way. But we'll see. It's hard to say.
But at least you can go out and shop for a better product. Now, even if you don't qualify due to the stress test.
Correct. Yeah. Now you can shop your mortgage at renewal without having to worry about the fact that you may not qualify to do so. Because I think it was probably overstated a little bit. Like, for the most part, you could usually find a way of qualifying somebody, but not always. But there's a certain number of people that we would look at and they'd say, hey, my bank offered me this on my renewal. Can you help? And it's like, well, maybe let's ask a couple of questions. And I'm like, well, you know what? I couldn't qualify you to move you. Even if I can get you a better rate, I can't, I can't move you, you know? And I think that the lack of a stress test in those situations would help the consumer. And I think that the government's angle here is, let's not have it so that clients feel pigeonholed to renew with their existing lender at an uncompetitive interest rate just because they don't qualify.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join. type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the big wigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
You know, Kyle, you mentioned refinancing being a huge part of your business this year. I'm curious to hear why and what kind of strategies you're employing in this environment in the refinancing world.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about breaking a fixed rate mortgage is that typically the bank captures the savings of breaking your mortgage in what's called the interest rate differential penalty. So when you have a fixed rate contract, it's either 3 months interest for the penalty or the interest rate differential. And that penalty is the difference between your rate and current market rates over the remainder of the term. So if rates are lower, then they generally are going to capture that difference. However, in certain periods of time, so this is probably the third time, and this is a minor time, by the way, it's not a major opportunity like it has been in the past, but in the subprime crisis of 2008, a short-lived one during COVID, and again now, which is a longer type of effect, but not quite as obvious or prevalent. The interesting thing right now is that now that rates have fallen, they've fallen, but mostly for the longer terms, not for the shorter terms. So let me give you an idea here or paint a picture. If you took a 3-year fixed rate at 6% exactly a year ago, if you go to break your mortgage now and you have 2 years left on it, the 2 years and 1 year rates are still very high because the yield curve is inverted, meaning that short-term money is more expensive than long-term money. So while the Bank of Canada is still elevated and starting and continuing to cut, short-term rates are still high. So the IRD penalties are not triggering. It's just 3 months interest. So with most banks and most lenders, if you took a 3-year fixed rate in the second half of last year, something above about 5.5%, you almost certainly save money redoing your mortgage and putting it into a new 3-year fixed rate or into a variable term, which is another conversation altogether on variable versus fixed. But the way that the math works out is, generally speaking, people will save, they'll recoup the penalty cost over over 1 year of the remaining 2 years they have. And then that second year is pure savings. And in some cases, some of the analysis we've done, clients will save 17 to 23 grand by a net after all expenses by refinancing. It's not insignificant.
And everybody, as I recall, was taking 3-year fixed, right? That was
pretty much.
That was the play when rates were high.
Yeah. We have, you know, some clients took 2 years and some took ones, some took variables last year, but for the 80%+ of people were taking 3-year fixed rates. Yeah.
You mentioned fixed versus variable, and I feel like we've asked you this question every time you've ever been on the show.
Yep.
And but it's worth asking it again, I think, because we're in a very interesting moment, and not to put too fine a point on it, but the wounds are still deep for many people who took variables not that long ago.
Yeah.
And when it seemed to make, you know, the logic was very clear. But again, it seems like variable, the logic is very clear. But I'm curious to hear your take on fixed versus variable.
Yeah, I mean, before I talk about the numbers, this is a personal decision for sure. There's some customers that should be taking fixed rates. There are some customers that are more open to the risk that taking a variable, you know, entails. But if you take the personal side away and just look at the math, we build and update a spreadsheet. We update it every, you know, 4 weeks or so every month. And we look at the, you know, a couple of different economists and we map it out. We update our spreadsheet with the expectations of where the Bank of Canada will be on each of their upcoming meetings. And then we track that out. And since last September, so September of 2023, the pendulum has either been break even to go fixed versus variable or pro variable. And right now the pendulum is definitely quite pro variable. As the Bank of Canada cuts and cuts and cuts, that gap between variable and fixed is shrinking. And the expectations that the Bank of Canada will continue to cut moving forward continues to get better. So, you know, looking at things right now as an example, if you looked at taking a fixed rate contract versus a variable rate contract, you'd be about 0.75% higher right now to take variable versus taking the fixed. But because it looks like the Bank of Canada is going to cut aggressively, like earlier we were talking about by March or so, they'd probably be about 0.75% lower. Well, that's a pretty short timeline. Like that's only a couple months away. And so for a lot of our clients, like, oh, you're closing in February. Like, okay, probably by the time you make your first payment, your variable rate will be the same as the fixed rate. And then any other further cuts from there are all bonus money for you, right? So it does seem like the variable should outperform fixed. The other way to look at it, which for a while there, we weren't sure if this would be valid or not, but the other way to look at it is the variable is more flexible in the sense that you can lock it into a fixed rate at any time. So if you expect fixed rates to continue to drop a little bit in the next 6 or 12 months, then you could lock in the variable into a fixed in 6 or 12 months, ride the wave down a little bit, lock it in, and then get a better rate later on.
So as our friend of the show, Dustin Woodhouse, always recently said, variable rates are back and so am I. So that's some truth to that.
That's funny.
That's great. So I guess maybe pivoting to the year ahead, Kyle, and then maybe some opportunities, because I know that not only are you somebody who's worked with investors over the years, but you're an investor yourself and you're always monitoring the market and looking for opportunities. And I'd like to open that kind of more up to anything related to real estate investing. So not just necessarily buying a rental property. But let's start maybe by, first of all, opportunities or areas in BC that you're excited about, and then maybe moving to Metro Vancouver.
Yeah, this is not like a get rich quick scheme, but other areas of BC that I do like. Vancouver Island has still been one of my tops on my list. I still see a lot of growth opportunity in Vancouver Island. I think that aging demographic, it's a very desirable place to be. And so I think that you'll see a lot of older people moving over there, but you're also seeing a lot of young people move over there too because of the cost of living. And so I do think that Vancouver Island will have a pretty good run for the next 10 or 20 years, in my opinion. Opportunities, I'm very curious to see what starts to happen in the areas like Kelowna, et cetera, with the short-term rental ban and what's going to happen temporarily to condo values and whatnot in those areas. And I don't know if I would want to be buying right away, but I'd be very interested in kind of keeping my finger on the pulse to see what happens, because there's a certain price point where if there is a massive devaluation of those assets, at some point it makes sense to buy back in, you know? And so I think that you want to watch what are the areas in the markets that have been hit hardest by the short-term rental ban, and then are there opportunities to maybe say, hey, you know what, if the price point gets down to this, then I could buy it and put a long-term tenant in there and I'd come out very well, you know?
That's a great one. And I think keeping in mind that the vacancy rates are still incredibly low in these markets.
They are. Yeah, exactly. And so I like that area myself. And I think that, you know, just keeping an eye on it would make a lot of sense. And then like in the Metro Vancouver area particularly, there's a lot of different opportunities. It's actually kind of overwhelming, to be honest. On one hand, I feel like Burnaby and building 4 to 6 units seems to be the spot right now. Like that's just the area to be able to just buy an old house on a big piece of land and turn it into 4 or 6 units. It seems like that's the municipality that seems the easiest to work with at this moment. You guys might have some opinions about that, but Burnaby seems to be fairly easy in that particular little segment right now.
100%.
So that's an area that I'm definitely keen on, and I've been helping clients purchase properties there myself too. So that's definitely an interesting spot. And I think overall, in general, finding areas where you can increase density, that's really the name of the game at this point that we stand on right now. So yeah, it's hard to say like any other specific markets. I can't really put my finger on and say, the city or this area I'm really, really watching, other than just downtown's an interesting one for me too. I still wonder, you know, the values have been relatively stagnant for 5 years, maybe 6 even.
And some submarkets getting hammered right now. So in the downtown core, which that one is maybe, I think anyone we would have on the show would be surprised by it.
And it's still
what's
not
happening downtown.
That it's hasn't, yeah. Like I feel like we've been kind of talking about downtown for a number of years now.
Yeah, I know. And I'm wondering, like, I thought that the post-COVID effect where, okay, now that entertainment's back and, you know, you want to watch hockey games again and you want to, you know, go to the club or whatever it is, whatever is your thing. I expected that now that the entertainment was open again, that people want to be close to the entertainment. But that hasn't really been the thing. I'm wondering if maybe the work from home movement and now getting a certain number of employers kind of sucking their employees back into the work from the office, you know?
Kind of slowly working at least 3-4 days a week in the office or whatever it is where that commute's kind of crap.
Yeah. And maybe that will have an effect too, but it hasn't been as prominent as I expected. Let's put it that way.
I just wonder if it's also like, I think the quality of, we were talking about this the other day, but the quality of like the restaurants and cafes and kind of just throughout the entire region, like downtown used to be a spot to go almost if you had sophisticated tastes for, you know, a particular restaurant
or
cafe or whatever. But now it seems like, you know, you drive to any one of the municipalities in Greater Vancouver and you can get, you know, you see like an Artigiano or whatever coffee shop, Victory, whatever it is. I'm not cool enough to know what they are. I'm saying all the ones from 10 years ago. But
Victory's good, Adam. Artigiano, though, come on. If you know your coffee, I don't know.
Oh, man. Yeah, but I was just at, where was I the other day? But Nemesis on Great Northern Way. And like they're opening up a shop in Surrey Centre. Which, you know, I mean, they have fantastic coffee and it's a really great environment. Always it's like a real treat to go there. But you can go almost anywhere in the region now is the point.
But it's funny because that was something I think you said, Adam, about Japan, right? Like about Tokyo, where it's like...
It does remind me, and I haven't been to Tokyo in a few years, but I remember thinking the cool thing about Tokyo is that the cities are all around the transportation hubs, but it's not like how we've always kind of been Vancouver centric.
Yeah, it's not like
it's not Vancouver centric.
It's like its own,
right? And they're all kind of generally pretty great for different things, right? Like there might be better shopping in this area. But this is more, you know, high-end food restaurants, that sort of thing, nightclub districts. Like, but generally speaking, you want to spend time in all of them or potentially live in whichever one kind of caters to your more of your lifestyle.
And when you brought that up, that was kind of almost like not that it's changed that much in the last couple of years, but that was like in the future. But I do feel like it's increasingly clear that that is actually kind of already, whether it's Brentwood or Burquitlam or... You know, wherever Metro Town follow the lines, right? Like they're all their own kind of energy hubs that have their own unique aspects. And it's not like you're going to downtown necessarily. Well, what about pre-sale?
What about pre-sale?
Well, no, oh, I'm just wondering, like, because I'm just thinking from Well, I feel like we're done that point, weren't we?
Yeah, we're done that point.
Yeah.
No, but it's just interesting. Like, no, but there's, yeah. So, no, Kyle, the two things that stand out to me here are, you know, people moving towards multifamily fund type investing or adding density, which is a very specific, you have to be pretty sophisticated investor to want to take a project like that on, and there's a lot of capital involved in, et cetera, et cetera. What about those, you know, those people, the old school Vancouver investors, the mom and pops? Like, is pre-sale interesting at all in your mind, or
They haven't been very interested in them for a little while. In fact, even the people that were interested in them 3 years ago and now have to close on them are now not interested in them. So I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but
yeah,
I have a lot of clients who come to me with, you know, 3 weeks before closing or less, and they say, I've been trying to sign it and I haven't been able to sign it. I don't want it, but I have to close on it. A lot of those. So it's interesting to see that. And the pre-sale market has been very, very quiet, very difficult to sell a unit, even though they're getting close to being finished. And, you know, a lot of people would love to have a brand new unit, but for some reason, the pre-sale units are really hard to sell. So yeah, I'm not sure. It's a really tough time. A lot of the pre-sales have been hammered, you know, like I've heard of some people in the Butterfly in Vancouver walking away from their 20% deposits, like $800,000 deposits to just, will somebody just buy this off of me, you know? So it's an interesting situation. I do think that there will be opportunity because what's happening is the number of housing starts is decreasing, right? So what's going to happen, you start to look a few years into the future, the properties that there aren't as many properties getting started to be built now as there should be, which means that if you take a pre-sale that completes in a couple of years from now, you'll be closing in a market where interest rates are lower, supply will probably be lower, demand will probably be higher. Like it seems like it's a great opportunity. Yeah. It's just, I wonder if people, again, kind of like getting stung by the government on all these new policies, getting stung by interest rates going up, et cetera, just thinking, do I want to take that risk? And I would just tell anybody that's looking at buying a pre-sale, just make sure that you have the wherewithal and the means to be able to close if you do that. Too many people bought pre-sales with the pure intention of flipping it and had no intention of closing on it. And if you can't sell it, you're going to be in a position where you're going to have to close on it one way or another, and it could be a lot more expensive than you think. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that's the big thing. Like right now, I think pre-sale buyers, and it's playing out in the market too. Like launches where a long runway, like a longer time horizon. So typically concrete and a really, really great location is the stuff that's really moving right now still, you know. So I think that makes sense.
But it's interesting to think about how these kind of, not always scars, but like you think, I feel like people buying pre-construction up until 2022 would reference, you know, their friends or family or whoever, you know, that made 100% return in 2017. Like there was years of dining out on those returns, right? Like everybody was talking about those returns for so long and it drove the market. And even some people that are completing on properties, yeah, this fall that were delayed, but they were still bought at the peak of the market. You know, they're not appraising, you know, they're underwater every month by, you know, God knows how much, and it's kind of a terrible situation. But I wonder about the flip side to that, like the scars of this moment and how long that reverberates through that pre-sale market. And because we've had guests on talking about, you know, now's the time with incentives, low deposits, long runways, exactly what you're talking, low supply. And I wonder if the people that, you know, can kind of look past that will be rewarded, or if it's, you know, you kind of have to have that, like, you know, Adam, you mentioned short memory at some point. It does seem, at least for the returns, the great returns on that one side, there was a very long memory for that. And I wonder how long it takes to kind of get over this. Did I tell you about my cousin who lost his shirt story? Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah. I guess my thought is that people will forget this. This will go into the past and it'll be, you know, 10 years from now, we'll be looking at that like, oh yeah, you know, 2022 to 2024 really did suck, didn't it?
Yeah.
Ha ha ha. But, you know, sure did make a lot of money in 2027 or whatever, right? It's just, I do think that that will pass. But it may take a little bit of time for people to get around to it. And I think the challenging part is, like the last pre-sales that I bought, when I ran the analysis before I put my deposits in, we looked at it and said, well, my rent would about cover my expenses with 20% down. And so it made sense, but it's really hard to pencil anything out today like that. That's the big issue.
Right.
You know, you do that math, you're like, nope, it doesn't work with 20% down, right?
No.
It just doesn't at the moment. And of course, if you predict moving forward, okay, well, interest rates should fall down. Okay, but what if they don't? You know, inflation pressures on rents should boost rental rates, but inflation on rents has decelerated considerably even the last year, right? So do you really want to build in these future potentials in order for it to pencil out so that you're happy if you have to close on it? And the problem is that if you're not happy and you don't want to close on it, the government, and let's say that you can make a bit of a profit, the government's got, you know, another hand in your pocket now that they didn't have in there a few years ago too, right? So it just seems like no matter what, wherever you look and turn as an investor, it's like, I don't know what to do here. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you though. I think that there will be moments where there will be opportunities. There's going to be a developer who's like, I got three more units I got to get rid of because I've got to hit my target for my pre-sale percentage so I can get my construction financing to go to the next stage. I got three left. Just do whatever you got to do to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Right.
And completed stuff too. I think there's the opportunity there. And it's exactly that. It's like, get this off my books.
That's, totally. You know. Yep. Because those last units, like if you're a builder, you're usually building to you're hoping anyways, like a 15% margin on your costs, right? So really, if you know, those last 15% of your units are basically where all of your profit are, right? So if you've blown out a bunch of those, you're at the point now where like every single sale is just putting that extra money in your jeans. It's not like you have to, but at the end of the day, like they want to take their cash and they want to take their profits off the table and they want to move it into the next project and they want to keep the wheels turning, right? So I do think there'll be some opportunity there too, but it might be, I don't know how many there will be. I expected there would have been more blood in the streets by now, and there hasn't been, you know? The market has an interesting floor kind of underneath it at the moment. And I think that's where I think we would have seen a lot more investors jump in. I mean, I saw a lot of investors jump in early 2009, like when the subprime crisis and the world was falling apart. And then May of 2009, I remember it was the turnaround. And all of a sudden, the values got to a certain point. The rates got to a certain point. And investors like, yep, I will buy that Yaletown condo for $340,000, you know? And it was just there because it made sense. And that just hasn't happened in this climate. It's a very weird time to be an investor.
Kyle, maybe as a final question, we're in the last month of 2024 here. Thoughts on 2025? What's the market going to look like?
So much better.
Buckle up.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly.
I think all of us talking here have been burned a little bit with the whole, it's going to be better next year. Oh, next year for sure. But there is a growing sentiment for sure that 2025 is going to be a turnaround year. It may not be a takeoff, jump on the rocket and go to the moon year, but it will be a turnaround year. I think that rates will hit a certain point where you start to get rates into the high threes even, and they start to have the three in front of them. I think that's going to be a major trigger point for consumers to buy in. I think if you look at the typical like timeline of how long it takes for immigrants to move to Canada, settle, and then want to buy, it's usually about 2 years. And most of the immigration came in, you know, 2022, 2023, particularly 2023. I think that all of the signs are pointing towards 2025 being a strong year. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm a very optimistic person by nature. And the last couple of years has changed me a little bit. So I'm now a little bit more cautiously optimistic, but I do think that 2025 is going to be a good year. And I am preparing my business for that to be the case and making sure that I'm not understaffed and everything for next year. Not overstaffing myself, but I'm making sure I'm not understaffed either.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we'll leave it there, Kyle. But we do have this segment called the 5 Wire 5 lighthearted questions to end the show. Do you have
of course
time to stick around for that?
I do. Yep.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yaletown, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
Question number one, Kyle, a book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners?
I'm rereading Atomic Habits right now, and it's really good.
That's got to be maybe one of the number one books recommended on this show, but it's a staple. It's a good one.
Are you reading it because you're gearing up for January 2025 and all your new habits, or is it just kind of by accident that you're doing it here?
No. I'm rereading it because my wife's reading it and she's like, you need to read this.
I've already implemented this.
Okay. Thanks, hon.
You're enjoying it.
Well, long story short, I am enjoying it. Yeah, it's definitely good. Long story short, I think actually it's important at this moment in my life because I got a bad concussion playing ice hockey last June, and I haven't been playing sports since last June. So it's been, you know, quite a long road. Ooh. I couldn't go to the gym at all for 6 months, and then it was another 6 months of like working with concussion symptoms and stuff in the gym, and then so. You know, fast forward an entire year, then I could finally start, you know, actually pushing myself in the gym. And then I was just grossly out of shape. But at that point, you know, with the concussion, actual symptoms behind you, now it's like just training your body to get back into the habit of doing that. You know, I used to be good about going to the gym and all that kind of stuff. And then now it's a new thing that you have to do. And I never really thought of myself as somebody that needed to focus on that mental side of it. But once you get off the train, sometimes it's really hard to get back on, right? And so this book is just really timely for me, I think, at this point in my life where I'm finally able to start to develop those good habits of getting back to the gym and starting to get back on the ice and all that.
Put the shoes at the front door. All right, I like it.
Exactly, right? Yeah, make it easy, make it attractive.
In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
It's probably that from a business perspective, I've always been able to identify an opportunity and then push, and then always have been able to like maintain my growth in my business or maintain the staff that I already have. Like usually for a bad year, not growing was a bad year for me. For years and years and years. I think that I had to change that belief, I suppose, in the last couple of years. And sometimes you just have to you have to take steps backwards as much as it sucks. Sometimes you have to take steps backwards because of what the world throws at you, and you have to reset and then charge forward. And you know that you can push forward faster and harder and grow back to that point again in the near future. Better because of the systems and everything you've developed already, but we had to shrink our company a fair bit because of the market circumstances, which really sucks when you're like, oh my god, I used to not have to do all these little things in the business, and now I'm having to do all of these things again. But I also feel very comfortable that when the market allows for it, we'll be able to grow and grow very quickly, and we'll be much stronger for it.
I heard somebody describe it recently as when women want to grow their hair out, they will cut off 2 inches in order for it to grow again at the right pace. And I think that's applicable to business. You have to be prepared to make some cuts or to shrink in order to grow again.
Only 2 inches must have been nice. Let's take a lot more off.
Your hair might have been very long. Who knows?
Yeah.
What have you been binge watching, Kyle, when you're not working on the business?
I rewatched The Last Dance the other day, like a little while ago. Yeah. So I spent on my list of like, oh, am I ready to rewatch that? Because that was like the COVID show, you know, but it was a good one. Yeah. I rewatched that recently.
And that's great. A good Christmas one, eh? Like, that's a fantastic one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Favorite band or music?
I'm still into electronic music. You guys know that. Yeah, it hasn't really changed. I like all music. I appreciate all music, but electronic music is still my jam right now.
And well, from the outside looking in, you're deep into EDM is what they call it, right? So give us a hot DJ or a track you're into right now.
It's like Casey Kasem asking this question. All right, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, a DJ that my wife and I are both into quite a bit, and our second dog is actually named after, is Rufus Du Sol. And recently we got tickets to go, this will be next summer, we got tickets to go see him in, or see the group in, where are we going to go see him again? I think it's somewhere down in Oregon.
Wow.
So yeah. Yeah. So for those of you that know, you know. But Rufus Du Sol is one of our favorite artists.
He's huge in that, or that group is huge in that world though, right?
They're huge everywhere. Yeah.
They
sell out
for the first time today.
Yeah, I know. They sell. No, check it out though. It's very easy for anybody to get into. Like once if you hear them, you're like, oh yeah, this is like almost anybody
it's can good stuff.
Get into it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And last but not least, Kyle, something you've purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life.
Well, I ordered I finally splurged and ordered one of those massive ultra wide monitors, and it was under $1,500. We plugged it in and did all of that, and then it didn't work. So I'm patiently waiting for the new one to get delivered. But I've been waiting for quite some time, and I'm like, I've been really cheap the last couple of years, probably just because of the market and everything. But I finally decided, no, I think it's time to do that. So looking into like how you can snap the screens in and how you can, you know, if you want to have just one thing that is visible or multiple things visible at the same time, it just seems like it's a much better way of functioning instead of having like the three screen setup, which I currently have. Just having one screen that is three or more screens sounds very appealing to me. So I'll let you know how it actually functions next time.
Nice. So Kyle, how can people find out more about what you're up to, or of course, the Green Mortgage team, or how can they get in touch?
Yeah. Website, www.greenmortgageteam.ca. You can email us at info@greenmortgageteam.ca or call 604-229-5515.
And you guys do webinars. Good webinars.
Yep. Every month. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, thanks again for your time, Kyle.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Kyle Green, founder of the Green Mortgage Team.
Yeah, Matt, always great having Kyle on the show. And, you know, he's getting you that green. He's helping you make that green.
Do you ever think Kyle thought the tag on is let Kyle put the green in your jeans? Or I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. I'm just spitballing here.
That's why you're not in I guess you are in marketing. Good Lord. After that, maybe you should.
I'm hanging up my license.
Yeah. Quit your day job. How about that? Anyways, no, it's always great having Kyle on the program. And yeah, he is a force. Absolutely. I did feel like we went a little dark in that conversation. Just in our, there seemed to be like an overall, a bit of a tone that there was some real frustration. And sometimes when you talk about policy all the time, it's hard not to get bogged down a bit. And I think everyone is watching challenges for investors kind of leaving the market. It's no surprise that it's mostly end users kind of moving through the residential real estate market right now in BC.
Yeah.
And
you know, I mean, I think that's frustrating on a lot of levels, and mostly when it comes to the creation of housing and new construction. So it is, it's hard to not get bogged down a bit having these conversations. But the one thing I want to say is I am actually optimistic about 2025 in terms of activity. And we've seen now 2 months in a row.
Yeah, the stats that went out on the live wire and the real estate board produced, like that's, there's green shoots. I actually think Ben Smith is going to look like a genius calling the bottom there. But
well, and I think you're right. I think there's green shoots for sure. But then also, you know, I feel like there's more people reaching out right now. Like just collectively, if we're talking about on the ground, which is why this podcast was started in the first place. There's rumblings. Just talking to other agents and talking to people in our world, where I feel like a lot of people have buyers reaching out and saying like, you know what, this upcoming year or this spring or whatever. And also sellers reaching out and saying, you know, this is the year. So I'm optimistic that we're going to be seeing more sales volume increase this upcoming year. So yeah, I think it's an interesting market to be watching.
Don't let the podcast get you down.
Wow. That was great.
No, it was great. And you know what? Also,
I think we were a little bit more optimistic than we're giving ourselves credit.
No, and you know what? It's just like, hey, if you're not going to, it's just a real conversation about where we're at and the frustrations that exist. And no, I feel like I'm better for it. And hopefully somebody out there is as well.
Yeah. And side note, we've gotten great feedback from this episode. Our good friend, Corey Wright from William Wright, commercial real estate services, was on the show last week. Really insightful episode. We've had some positive feedback. If you want to check in and kind of like a recap of not only the commercial real estate market, but just generally geographically what's going on throughout the province, I think Corey did a really good job of breaking things down last week. So head back an episode if you didn't catch it.
Very similar. You know, I feel like Kyle's got his, he's talking to people across the country. Corey's got offices across the province. It's just like, they're so plugged in. So yeah, two great episodes in a row, that's for sure.
For sure. And Matt, what else do we got for the day?
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. That is our website where all things real estate related live. You want to head over there for things like the live wire. We just put out those stats we mentioned, along with sales ratios where you can dig into a submarket, a neighborhood, a price band. You can really get granular with where the market is actually busier, where it's softer. Those go out on the live wire every month. We get deal of the month. We have the pre-sale access, VIP access to pre-sales, different incentives. That's kind of being slowly intertwined with SkyTrain Condo Living as well. And of course, we have tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Just click buy with us and you can set up your own free account. Like we just talked about, good time to be monitoring the market. And going into spring is when that's like shopping for a jacket in the fall. It's like the best time. You're going to have the best product on the market. So if you're thinking about moving through the market, we are going into the glory days of the real estate season. So enjoy.
And we're going into the glory days of goal setting. Sent me a ChatGPT goal setting. It was like ChatGPT wrote you an essay on goal setting, which was
interesting. I don't trust myself doing anything right now without ChatGPT. It's insane how it's a part of my everyday life now. I'm waiting for the chip that goes in my brain and just call this
the
stuff up.
And you brought this up, but it's true. The scariest thing is how you literally don't have to think much anymore, like deep thinking goes away. You know, I'm helping my 13-year-old with her math homework and I'm like, why do I have to do this when ChatGPT can do this? And I just, you know, read it off. I don't have to actually think about how did I used to do that? I don't care. ChatGPT.
I'm helping my 5-year-old with her reading. I'm doing the same thing. I don't trust myself. Matt, how can people get in touch?
You know, you can try me at any point, 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, and we will be back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.